Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
Good morning, friends. This is Courtney Kibblewhite with Voices of Montana, and the podcast we have for you today might pull at your heartstrings a little bit. It might cause you to take some action. I'm not sure how it's going to hit you, to be honest, but it's a snowy day when we're recording this podcast, so we hope you are staying safe wherever you're at. And listen in to learn about the Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch. And learn about their recent merger with the Youth Dynamics organization. This is going to be game-changing for youth behavioral mental health across the entire state. This organization serves over 3,000 children. We've got guests from Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch on today, and we're addressing everything from what mental health initiatives might be in the legislative session this year, as well as talking about what schools are doing and not doing related to kids' mental health. So we hope you enjoy. And if you do, we'd love to have some comments from you or even suggestions on future topics. Thanks so much. Enjoy the show. I've got three guests in studio today: Christy Farver with Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch Foundation, Kaya Lance, and Kim Collins, and I'm so blessed to have you all in here today. I know probably even in our morning huddle this morning, we had some questions. If you live in Yellowstone County, you're probably fairly familiar with Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch, but if you live in northeastern Montana, you might be more familiar with the program formerly known as Youth Dynamics. And recently, these two great organizations have merged. So I'd like to jump in and I'd like to learn a little bit more about what is Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch and Youth Dynamics. Who'd like to take that question? Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah. So thanks for having us this morning. And it definitely is white and glistening out there. So YBGR was founded in 1957, really under the idea of, at the time, there were only, you know, juvenile delinquency centers, and our founding fathers, if you will. So we have to find something better than that. We need to teach kids a way of life, a way to learn skills, and really just ways that they can improve their life, not just go through the juvenile delinquency.
So that's like they've had trouble, they've gotten in trouble, and now they're being punished for their consequence. But you're talking about how do we change that trajectory?
Let's teach them to fish.
Right. Yes.
Essentially. Uh-huh. So at that time, our campus out on 72nd Street here in Yellowstone County was the vision, and really was built through like the blood, sweat, and tears of these people and their vision. Over the years, then we expanded beyond our residential services out into the community. So right now, as of 2025, we're in many locations across the state of Montana, from the Flathead Valley to Missoula, Hamilton, up to Wolf Point, Haver, Glendive, Miles City. And certainly Yellowstone County is still our largest hub, but we're trying to have the philosophy of let's go where the kids are. Let's find out where the needs are, and let's find the people that can be healthy adults to walk alongside the kids and the families and teach them to fish, essentially.
Well, let me bring in Kyle Lance here. Kyle, you were formerly with Youth Dynamics, now merged with Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch. Tell me a little bit, what did Youth Dynamics do before, and now how has your capacity changed with this merger?
Yes, thank you, Courtney. Youth Dynamics was a program that started in 1981, started with a group of volunteers, Volunteers of America, actually, that started with therapeutic foster care, I guess more of a foster care program. It wasn't necessarily therapeutic foster care at that moment because it was so early, but turned into a statewide organization headquartered here in Billings. Our offices, administrative offices and local clinical offices are here in Billings, but it expanded and provided services out in eastern Montana on the High Line and statewide over to the western side as well, and really focus on community-based services, giving kids mentorship programs, care management for families where maybe there were some issues, they just didn't know where to turn. They could come to Youth Dynamics and get help, get questions to their, get answers to their questions on services and support. We also really focused heavily on therapeutic youth group homes here in Billings. There's four of them. There's four in Boulder, Montana. There's one in Great Falls and one in Helena. And if kids were struggling at home in an environment they just needed to be out of and try to get some the care and the treatment they needed, they could go and stay at our residential homes. But Youth Dynamics was a program that was really geared towards community one-on-one daily mentorship programs and things that could really help kids during a difficult time and help the families as well, because the families need answers and some support as well. So,
well, to me, that's pretty profound to have two very legacy organizations doing very important work across their state that then come together and decide, look, there's some synergies in what we're doing. How did that come about? And what does that really mean for being able to deliver care?
Yeah, so I would say that our two CEOs, Mike Shavers and Dennis Sulzer, really became peers in the field. Both of our legacy agencies were part of the Behavioral Health Alliance of Montana, which is many different mental health and substance use providers for both children and adults across the state. Through that alliance, Dennis and Mike just really realized that both YDI and YBGR share the same philosophy behind our mission and our values. And looking ahead, realizing some of our peers out in the field that have tried to find a new CEO. Dennis was wanting to retire, rightly so. But watching some of our peers in the field look for a CEO and really just struggle to find someone that could carry on the legacy of their agencies, it became a greater risk to go that route than to bring these two agencies that share a mission and value together. That was the preferred route.
Yep. It brought an easier transition, if you will, because the trust and relationship between the two with Mike and Dennis, it worked very well, and it made sense to do it that way at the time, especially.
So we were talking earlier, a lot of us understand, you know, we understand how our schools come alongside our children. And then we understand how, you know, someone may get some private counseling or may reach out to a healthcare worker. But how does this, maybe even you could drop a specific situation. What is happening at a school when you identify a child and then they end up being a part of the Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch circle? Can you walk us through how that works exactly?
Yeah. So an example that I can think of right now is we have a partnership with one of our schools. We have many different partnerships across the state of Montana with different school districts. So they say, hey, YBGR, we need some support. Our school counselors can only do so much. A lot of school counselors across the state of Montana have like 300 to 400 students attached to one counselor. So the type of needs that our kids are experiencing and their families are experiencing are just too much for a school counselor. And we have amazing school counselors across the state. They're very well trained. It's just the capacity, the volume of need. So some of our schools will come and say, YBGR, is there something that you can do to help support us? So we have different programs across the state with school partners that we hire mental health professionals. And I can think of this one young lady, family grew up, lot of domestic violence. This little girl and her siblings just witnessed horrific things. Mm-hmm. Comes to school and behaviors start to present. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of food insecurities. She was often hungry. Hygiene was an issue. And we're talking about middle school-aged adolescent girl where normally hygiene starts to become really important for them. So that was a kiddo that was witnessed by their school, the teacher, the school counselor, and they make a referral, you know, ask for YBGR to step in and help. So luckily, this young lady's mom really wanted help. And this young lady wants help, too. So this kiddo is currently in our services. Mom is engaged, they have gotten away from the domestic violence scenario. They still struggle with food insecurity, still have some housing insecurities, but they're trying. They're trying, and they're she's now on the volleyball team. Hygiene is still a little bit of an issue, but that's okay. We can deal with that. But she's you know, learning different skills, different peer relationships. She's now probably prone more towards violence. That's part of how she was also identified in the school setting. She was getting into fights and whatnot. And I think sometimes what we forget is that what we as maybe hopefully healthy adults see, that violence seems like that shouldn't be someone's normal. But when you're a young kid and that's all you've ever experienced was violence, that is their normal. And that is something that then us healthy adults come in and say, actually, that's not what we would call normal or healthy or what we want from you. And it really sometimes can throw kids into chaos because everything they've ever known, while it didn't feel good, it was what life was for them. So,
well, you think about, there's just so many different cues that kids pick up on in their learning. Yeah. And, you know, if someone responds to anger with violence, with hitting something, with hitting someone, then you learn that that's how you respond when you get angry. And,
right.
And if that's
exactly
what you're taught, you have to relearn an approach. So in this example, was the student use the community-based services or at what yep. point does that get elevated to some of your residential treatment?
Yeah, so what I would say is most of the time, community-based services, we're working hard to keep kids out of residential services. So we don't want kids to go into therapeutic group homes or into the residential services we have in Billings. So we try our best to keep them in their home, in their school, in their community. But there are times where those interventions just aren't enough and kids need that safety of that 24/7 level of care for the therapeutic group homes or the residential psychiatric services. Most of the time, it's the family that acknowledges, hey, we need some help. We need time for our kiddo to go to this 24/7 safe environment where they can learn the skills and techniques. And simultaneously, hopefully, the family is also working on how to create a healthier home environment. And that in parallel with one another, when a kiddo is reintegrated back into their home, we have a healthier environment.
Yeah, and I would add that a lot of our programs aren't as severe as the in-home 24/7 care. We do have some programs that are really geared towards one-on-one, day-to-day mentorship programs to really help be a positive role model to the kids. And they don't, not all the kids, I mean, we talk about the programs that are available and some of the things that have happened, and not all situations are like that. There's some very positive situations where some kids just need somebody to help them with their homework. Take them to a baseball game. Just hang out and have that older companionship, if you will, just to help them through the day. And then they'll assess, and if things continue to, you know, get worse, which we hope they don't, then we'll assess and look at the next level of care. But the goal is to keep the kids at the lowest level of care possible, and, you know, help them grow.
And in all of those situations, does it always include an element of parental education as well?
That's certainly the hope. Mm-hmm. We find the most success for our kids is if their parent is really engaged and involved. I'd like to say that happens all the time, but sometimes, you know, our families typically were once the kids that we're serving. Mm-hmm. And unless they are ready to, you know, improve on their own mental health, sometimes that doesn't always happen, but certainly we love it when the parents are engaged and
And parenting is hard
parenting
no matter who you are,
so
can we
hard.
Just say?
Yes,
yes.
It is hard.
None
yes.
of us have, you know, you haven't done it before, and no matter what your background is, you know, teaching yeah. kids how to stop fighting or, you know, the
yeah.
little responsibility, keeping your room picked up, getting the dog fed. It's
sometimes we go in and do some mental health training to even our school partners sometimes, because, you know, we have competing priorities, right? That teacher wants and needs the child to learn math or English or whatnot. And then we have a kiddo that is struggling with food insecurities, or they don't know where they're going to sleep that night. So I like to tell people that imagine a time where maybe you got into a fight with your significant other, or you've got a your house flooded, that sort of thing. And there's like this pressure, and then you're told to go to work, or you're told to, for our kids, to sit in class and pay attention. And sometimes those other emotions just take over, and we have to take care of those other emotions before we can concentrate on work. Like I have to, I get very hangry. Yes. Like I had to eat a granola bar on the way here and I need my coffee or this was going to go even worse than how I'm blabbing right now. So
we all learn how to regulate our yeah. emotions and it does right. take yeah loved ones in our life to yeah. help do that. So yeah.
So our school partners, we can educate them to make sure you have like a granola bar. So if a kiddo didn't get breakfast at home or missed it at the school, they can get fed. And our Yellowstone Foundation has been amazing with helping us with different.
Well, when we get back, we're going to talk more about how this program gets funded. We've got Christy Farver in studio, also from Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch Foundation. We'll be back after a moment with Voices of Montana. Welcome back on a wintry Monday morning to Voices of Montana. This is your guest host, Courtney Kibble-White, and I'm honored to be joined in the studio today with Christy Farver, Kyle Lance, and Kim Collins representing the Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch. And we were just talking, I'm not sure if anybody has any positive stories out there or knows anyone who's participated in any of the Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch or Youth Dynamics program, but we would sure invite a call like that. We all need a little optimism on a cold winter day. So just want to let you know the phone lines are open. It's 866-627-5483. If this organization has touched your lives, we'd sure love to hear from you this morning. But as I mentioned before the break, jumping back in with Christy Farver, who's Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch Foundation's Executive Vice President of Development. And Christy, tell us how this program gets funded. It sounds like it does an enormous amount of work across the entire state. Where does the funding come from?
Yeah, so thanks, Courtney. Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch, obviously, they provide services. A big part of that, about 38% of that is Medicaid. The foundation, we account for about 17%. And then actually private insurance is right about, I want to say about 25%. And then there's other Medicaids, Healthy Montana Kids, et cetera. So it's a real mix. The majority of the kids that are receive services from YBGR are from low-income families. So obviously Medicaid's a big part of that. But the foundation, like I said, we fund about 17% of the budget. And that provides for some programs and services that might not otherwise be available just strictly through reimbursements. In the residential program, for instance, you know, the equestrian therapy, the pet therapy, some of the rec therapy might not be possible without the support of the foundation. And then, you know, the community-based services, we have funds available for folks, what we call the food pantry, which really isn't an actual food pantry, but it's a fund available so that staff can get that granola bar or can provide a lunch. Or, you know, sometimes we've had families that just kind of run out of food support or money, more month left.
Yeah.
So they can use that fund to purchase groceries. And it's not intended as a long-term solution, but kind of a stopgap measure. We also have like the emergency fund if a family's power is about to be shut off. Or I think we've helped with rent. One little girl broke her glasses and the family couldn't afford to replace them. So just things like that to have available for families. And in fact, I think Kim was saying they just had done some work up in Northeast Montana, bought some groceries, helped with bills, or et cetera, because it's very cold up there right now.
Right.
So that's the kind of the things the foundation helps with.
Well, and tell us, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the ranch itself. I know my friend Gary Adams helps there with the ranch. And and I don't know about you, but a kid growing up in Montana, how many times have you heard your dad comment on some wild, crazy kid and say, oh, if we could just send him out to the ranch for a few days and put him to work in a real honest job. So is that really what's happening out at the ranch, or what? How does the...
Well,
you know, explain a little bit yeah. about that identity, because I don't know if it's as unique as we think it is being Montanans, but how does that play into a kid's recovery?
Right. Well, it's great. First of all, you know, I understand I did not grow up in Billings, but I've heard from people that do, you know, that their parents used to threaten them, you know, if they misbehaved, they'd get sent out to YBGR. That's not quite how it works. The kids that are in the residential program all have a diagnosis of seriously emotionally disturbed. So these are kids that have really dealt with some issues. They're not kids that miss curfew a couple of times. So they come out to the ranch. You know, they go to school out at the ranch. They live, they work, et cetera, or eat, work out at the ranch. And there's just a lot of, you know, actually the first time I toured it when I started working at the foundation, I was like, it's a threat to get sent out here. This is amazing. They've got a rec center. They've got horses. They've got the dogs. They've got this wonderful Votek shop. I mean, it's really amazing. A beautiful chapel. So along with all the traditional, you know, therapies and counseling, et cetera, like you said, they have the pet therapy. They're the golden retrievers, you know, that come in. And these dogs, you know, first of all, the kids just love them. They come into the rec center. There's Cooper and Emmy Lou just loving all over them. But they take those dogs to therapy sessions because it can help the kids relax and feel safer to have an animal with them. On occasion, even they'll go over to the clinic with them if a youth has a particular fear of, you know, needles or something, that those dogs can help them feel more calm. We also have equestrian therapy, you know, where they work with the horses. They use the Agala model of therapy. So they're not actually riding the horses. They're working with the horses, although there is just rec riding available as well. I mentioned the Votek program. They have welding, wood shop, small engine repair, bikes. Just, you know, again, really amazing things. And, you know, we hear stories of kids that, you know, just aren't responding well in the classroom. But once you get them out, you know, woodworking or welding or something, and they're working with their hands, they just kind of blossom. And they also pick up some real-world skills that they can use. We've had kids, or Ranch has had kids go on and be welders and mechanics and various things. So it's a really wonderful program out there. And as I said, there's also the chapel. There's a that's kind of been part of the Ranch since its inception, the Spiritual Life program that is available to kids as well. So the rec center, there's a pool, there's a gym. I know some people that have grown up around here, you know, they'll have grad parties there. You know, it doesn't interfere with the kids that are living there, but they have grad parties there. And some people probably, I hear a lot of people say, oh, yeah, we had my grad party there. But that's available to the kids as well, because physical activity is very important as well, you know, not getting cooped up and such. So it's really an amazing place.
So Kyle, when you think about Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch, what do you think of is unique about the services and the people that work there, the staff? I mean, I can only imagine the level of stress that it might take to witness some of these challenges.
Definitely. The ranch is very unique, and you heard a lot of detail from Christy and what the ranch provides. But the fact that the services don't just, they're not just specific to the ranch. The services, they we're statewide. Yes, we have our campus in here in Billings, and there is a reason for it to be there with the residential care, the 24/7 care for those that need it. But we have so much more in Eastern and on the High Line and on the Western part of the state where families need that support, and it's available to them to reach out and just say, hey, what do I do? I don't know where to go. But if they need that more direct care through residential, we have our group homes and the campus is available, you know, if that assessment proves that they need more care. And so there's so much detail that goes into it.
And tell us about the numbers, though. You mentioned earlier the percent of people that actually get served at the ranch or in group homes versus just the total number of people that are served throughout the state.
Yes. So with the ranch, we have about, I guess I'm going to look at some of my numbers here, but we serve just under 3,000 kids across the state. That's wow. That's all services included, residential, community, our day school. So going back to the ranch just isn't a place for kids where they need 24/7 care. We have kids in the community that may be struggling at their local schools, and they need some more one-on-one care that the ranch day school can provide. So they'll come to school during the day and they'll go back home. So they'll get a different level of service through the day school program as well. So between community-based services, residential care, and our day school programs, there's a lot of options for families that need that support. So
now, before we hit break, tell me, if you don't mind, Christy, why do people give? You said 17% of the funding is from donors. What draws people to give towards Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch?
Well, I think it obviously mental health is a big challenge. Kids are the most vulnerable. They just really want, and in Montana, you know, Montana has high rates of mental health challenges. You know, so you combine all those things, social media and, you know, just coming out of the pandemic, I think a lot of people identify with what those kids are going through, and they want to help. So that's we've had wonderful support from donors across the state of Montana and actually around the country for Yellowstone.
And we're going to come back and talk more about funding. Medicaid expansion is up for renewal.
Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
Welcome back to Voices of Montana. This is your guest host, Courtney Kibble-White. Thank you to Bernadette Jensen for helping to coordinate this meeting this morning with the Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch. Still would love to hear a positive story out there if somebody has one of how they may have been impacted by Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch or know someone who has. I know that there's probably countless lives that this organization has touched, and we're glad to see the movement towards the future that they're making of joining together with Youth Dynamics. And today we've got a number of folks on the studio, and I've actually got Mike Chavers, who's the CEO of Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch, on the phone. And Mike, Christy and I were just talking about the funding for Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch, and I know a good portion of the funding is also covered by Medicaid. Is that correct?
It is correct, yeah. We serve a lot of low-income youth, and many of those are Medicaid funded.
And is that funding threatened at all, or do you see a threat with Medicaid expansion potentially may or may not be renewed? Or tell us what you think about that.
Sure. So we're definitely tracking Representative Guthrie's bill on Medicaid expansion. We see it as a good thing overall for Montanans and the kids and families we serve, although most of the kids we work with are really covered under standard Medicaid, so that's not at risk. One of the things that I like to tell people is YBGR was here before Medicaid expansion and will be here after Medicaid expansion. Our goal is to make sure that we're serving kids and families, and we use these vehicles to do it effectively and accountably, but we're really we'll continue to do our mission regardless of what happens. But we're watching that and encouraging and providing information as we can. But YBGR will be here to serve our mission and to serve kids and families regardless.
Well, and tell us, what else have you made? Many trips up to Helena this legislative session, Mike? Or what are you guys watching in Helena related to youth and behavioral health?
Sure. Yeah. Made the trip up several times so far, and more just to be a resource and to be there. You know, the legislature in Montana is fast and furious, and you know, it's good to be on hand and to respond when questions are asked about kind of boots on the ground issues. There's a couple of other bills that we're watching in addition to the Medicaid expansion bill. Representative Beattie has a cost reporting bill out there for not only mental health, but senior long-term care and substance use disorder, intellectual developmental disabled agencies, really asking for every 2 years that there be some cost reporting on what the actual costs are, to hold us as providers accountable and to hold the system accountable to make sure that we're creating sustainable systems. So we're watching that one and really hoping to encourage the passage of that bill. Representative Romano has a school mental health bill out there for a pilot project through OPI to do some innovative work around getting kids involved directly in promoting mental health in our schools that we're excited about and would like to support. And then there's lots of discussion around the Behavioral Health Fund for Future Generations, the House Bill 872 that passed in the last legislature that has set aside an amount of money, $300 million, to rebuild and improve our behavioral health system to make sure that we're taking care of Montanans specifically and doing it smartly. So some of those dollars and those recommendations need to be approved in this legislature. So been up there quite a bit, just talking and informing and engaging on how we make sure that we're using those dollars in accountable and responsible ways.
Well, do you get as frustrated as I do sometimes, Mike, with the speed of government? I just,
you know, it's, yeah, it's all very incremental. It can be very slow at times, but then you get up there and it's just drinking through the fire hose during the session. There's so much information and things move so quickly. So it's kind of a mix sometimes.
Right. That's a great point. And isn't it true that that Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch did receive some grant funding already for the McVeigh Lodge?
Yeah, actually, both Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch and Youth Dynamics received some funding to try to rebuild services that were lost during either through underfunding over the last decade or so, or through COVID, just when the resources were spread thin, and particularly on the staffing end of things. So we've recently received money to do some remodeling projects that have been needed in our psychiatric residential treatment facility there in Billings. So we're upgrading some lodges for the kids. And then in the former Youth Dynamic properties, we're doing the same in some of our group homes out there, just making sure that places are attractive and well-designed for the type of kids we work with today. So we've been excited about that, grateful. There's lots of moving parts. We'll be working for the next 18 months to put these projects in place, but we're grateful. It's going to make a difference for kids.
Well, you're talking about that bill from Melissa Romano and thinking about the Department of Education. I'd be curious to ask the panel in general, do you think schools and school boards are doing enough in the public system to help kids and families address mental health? That's a broad question, and anyone who feels driven, I'm very curious on your thoughts. It looks like Kim Collins is raising her hand.
I think the schools are doing very well overall. They're doing the best they can with the resources that they have. A lot of our mental health services really depend on that clinical component. And what I mean by a clinical component is that a master's level therapist has to be involved in most of our services. And when you think of rural Montana, there's not a lot of therapists that are out in Scobie, for example, Plentywood, you know, those kind of really rural Montana. So unless you're in the larger hubs like Billings, Missoula, Bozeman, therapists are hard to come by. So I think with the bill that Mike was talking about through the school-based mental health programming, that's kind of the hope behind that, of we can do something more innovative to help support our schools. Some of our schools may not even have a school counselor. So you're looking at administrators being kind of the mental health expert, and that's not in their academia as their training. I'm actually certified as a school counselor, and mental health was just a small portion of my academia. Now that may have improved through the years, but even like health teachers, my brother's a health teacher, and mental illness is like a chapter of the curriculum. So schools are doing great with the resources that they have, but they do definitely need more support.
Well, and I suppose there's a balance there too between what the state mandates versus the freedom within the individual school and school board. I have to admit, I was surprised that when Governor Gianforte outlawed cell phones in the classroom, that not every single school across the state was already outlawing cell phones in the classroom. Things like that, that I don't know what goes into making that decision, but I can imagine there'd be varying levels of what decision does the state make in terms of how our children are emotionally educated and empowered with mental health training versus the individual teacher even deciding today we're going to learn about how to manage your anger or, you know, those kind of concepts.
Yeah. I mean, cell phones, that's a really great example. That's a really tough one to manage because kids are so quick and they can keep it underneath their desk and they don't even have to look at the keyboard like some of us probably do. So, But yeah, I mean, social media is a huge component of what has increased mental illness across the nation, not just Montana. But the idea that kids can go online and be bullied, they can go online, they can see what they're missing out on. Like, we experience that as adults. Like, mm-hmm. you go in and you see, like, your friend was on this amazing vacation, or they had a girls' trip and you weren't invited. Like, our kids are experiencing that every day. And it's really tough for schools to manage that component for sure.
Yeah, that's it's a lot. It's a lot to growing up today. It's a lot being a parent and trying to manage through some of those choices. When is a cell phone right for safety, or social media right for, you know, allowing you to communicate versus your friend with your friends versus, you know, coming in the way? And gosh, we're all just trying to learn this together. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to chat a little bit more about what you can do to support children across the state of Montana experiencing mental health challenges. We'll be back on Voices of Montana. Welcome back to Voices of Montana. Again, your guest host, Courtney Kibble-White. Thank you for being alongside of us and listening to this important issue. As we wrap up, I wanted to ask Kim Collins with Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch, one, does this work? Does all of this effort work? And maybe you could share a success story of an opportunity where a child's life has changed and we've changed the trajectory of someone's future with these services.
There's so many stories that come to mind of kids and families that have really done the hard work to improve their life and the trajectory of their life. But one story that comes to mind in particular is we had a dad over in Western Montana, lost his kids. The kids were removed, two littles, like under the age of two. Mom was not any healthier than dad. But dad was, he was homeless, he was addicted, but he wanted his kids. He wanted his kids back. So he was like, what do I need to do to get my kids back? Child Protective Services reached out to YBGR through our child welfare program. Dad was only allowed supervised visits at the time, so he would have to come to our office. We would, he was homeless. He didn't have a job. So we would help provide diapers. We would be able to help provide food through the foundation, and provide a safe environment for dad to visit his kids and also provide coaching and parenting skills for him. He had older kids that his relationship was really broken. But dad would show up. He showed up to every visit, and often he was hungry. Often he was cold. He was living in his car, and we're talking Northwest Montana. There's snow here, but there's a lot of snow over there. And he said, I want to be the dad that these kids deserve. So he worked the program. After about 18 months of like that parent coaching and skill building, he was reunified with his two little kids. He was able to get his CDL. So he was able to find housing and whatnot. He got sober. He worked on his sobriety. So this is an example of dad was really doing the work because he wanted to change that trajectory for his kids. And we were able just to be there and support that journey.
And what motivates us more than the love of a family member?
Amen. So
thank you for sharing that, Kim. All right. What can we as a community do if we've been, you know, touched today by some of these stories? What do you need from people all across Montana to support the behavioral health of kids moving forward?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to help. I mean, awareness for one, that, you know, YBGR is out there. We are statewide. There are those services available. Not everybody knows that. So, you know, if you hear of a youth that's struggling, maybe make that suggestion that they reach out. I mean, YBGR isn't necessarily the answer for every child, but there is a lot of services. There are a lot of services available. So awareness is a big one. There's different, there's some volunteer opportunities. I mean, this is a very vulnerable population of children. So working directly with kids. There is mentoring, although that's a fairly big commitment. But there are simple things like volunteer projects out at the ranch, out at the group homes, helping with the facilities, et cetera. For farmers and ranchers out there, there is the Homes for Heifers program that Gary Adams has run for years and years. You host a YBGR heifer or heifers at your ranch. You know, you feed them, breed them, and then That calf is donated back to YBGR. That's a wonderful way for farmers and ranchers to participate. And then, of course, there's funding. That's, you know, how we help a lot of this is with funding. And there's everything from, you know, leaving YBGR in your will. The foundation has a very robust planned giving department for trusts, charitable remainder trust, annuities, all those kind of things. If you're selling your farm or ranch, if you're selling equipment, you have a tax problem, we can help with that. And then there's, of course, just outright giving. We always take general funds. There's specific projects that can be funded, like the food pantry, different things like
Christy,
that.
And Christy, where should people go to learn more?
To our website, yellowstonefoundation.org. And I will say the chili cook-off, too, this year is September 25th out at the ranch. Lots of fun. So yellowstonefoundation.org is the place to kind of connect with all of this.
Well, and if I know anything about Montanans, we certainly show up for each other. And
absolutely.
And so, you know, don't assume that your school, whether you're in Wolf Point, Plentywood, Jordan, wherever you are, don't assume that they know how Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch services could help them. Perhaps you can just make a phone call today and connect people to services. So thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.